Oh, Cerise informed me that's an original piece she just sang us. Yeah, that I always say I think you need to be famous for that one, but you have several that I think you could be famous for. And she's about to release a new album in a couple weeks, so that's great. Thank you for being here again today. We always love it when you're visiting. Good morning.
Good morning.
Who are really heavy on this side today. So I'll do my best to look at you guys too, but they're going to really draw me in, I think. So I'm Reverend Karen Rice, and I'm the senior minister here at the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living, and I'm really happy to have you here because I have a sort of a significant message which somehow ends up being a wrap-up of everything I've spoken about this month. I don't think I understood how important each week has been to this sort of ongoing theme that I did not plan. It always reminds me that there's something bigger unfolding in the universe that's greater than we are and that demands to be heard in ways that are sometimes unexpected. But the title of my message, appropriately, under that premise anyhow, is Calling All Champions. Calling All Champions. And I think that was a gorgeous song that she sang. That was such a beautiful piece of music that reminds us that we're all called, you know, if not me, then who? And I want to broaden out this whole idea of what it means to be called and to be called as a champion, asking in some way there's this divine ask for us to step into a bigger way of showing up. And then I want to put that in a historical context for us today. I'm going to ask you to look in a different way than I usually do, and I think we also will have a little fun with all of that. So are you ready? Do you think you're a champion?
Yes.
Yes, you absolutely are. Good, I don't have to speak. We're done. That's it. You were easy to convince. The quotation that I chose as my leading quote of inspiration does not come from the founder of this teaching, Dr. Ernest Holmes. Usually that's where I like to begin, but today there was this other quote that kept calling and speaking to me. It's from a gentleman named Phil Bolsta who wrote a fabulous book of quotes. It's a current book, a current release. The book is called Through God's Eyes, and I love it when you sit with a book of wisdom and you can only concentrate on one little thread of it at a time, and that's the kind of book this is. Here's what Phil Bolsta says in his book. As you accept the notion of divine intelligence at work in your world, as you accept the notion, as you step into this bigger idea that, hey, there must be some divine intelligence at work in my world because I'm beginning to notice the way things fit together, there has to be some sense of intelligence or creative power or energy that has called us all together to be alive at this time in life. There is some way that as we accept that notion, we have an awareness then, an appreciation for the perfection of universal law, and that awareness begins to expand. So let me tell you, what it's just saying here is that notice that everywhere you look in your life, the divine is present and showing up. And as we notice that, as we appreciate that, we create an expansion in our very own consciousness that allows us to not only be familiar with these divine laws, these spiritual laws of the universe, but we learn how to use them, and then we then change our lives. That's the entire purpose of this teaching. And I love that we stand in that great truth, that there is something greater than I am that keeps all the planets orbiting exactly in this precise way they need to orbit together, and that in the way that I have this ability to observe that and to ponder that is what makes me a champion for what's possible. right? Because that awareness now is expanding and growing. So to champion something is to crusade for it. It's to stand up for it. To champion something is to put your heart and your soul and your mind and your physical being as well behind it, so that you know what it is that you stand for, what you believe in. And the idea that the way I see that personally, the way that I'm knowing I put my heart and my mind and my soul and my physical energy into what I'm looking at today, that for me is spiritual evolution. That for me is the evolution of consciousness. Now, Dr. Holmes spoke about evolution in terms of consciousness and spiritual evolution. Let me read you, there are quite a few passages I was able to find. Let me read you one. Evolution, this is Dr. Holmes now, evolution is an eternal unfoldment. We are always evolving, right? He says, it is an eternal unfoldment. Life reveals itself to whoever is receptive to it. Yeah, so how do you know that? How do you know God? By recognizing that it's right in front of you. It's in the sunset. It's in the companionship we find. That it's something we feel on Sunday mornings when we bring all of our focus together. It is something that is always unfolding in our lives and in all of life. So not only do we grow, but we are always then, because we're imitating that, we're co-creating in our life, we're imitating that great gift of life that we have, we are always growing, and so is humanity. And that's what I want to challenge you to wrap your mind around today, because this can be where we bump into some resistance, because we don't always look out in the world and see God. In fact, it's more likely that when we gaze out in the world, in whatever way you want to interpret that, we are more likely to notice first those things that are out of order, right? And then I don't know how you are in your home, but in my home, things have a certain order. I don't even know they have an order till I catch myself going around adjusting them just a little bit. And I think that when we look out at the world and we see the disorder, then there's something in our human nature that wants us to go fix it, to put it in a little better order so that it's more pleasing to us. But there is a way that does not involve fixing, but it is about the natural upward spiral evolving expansion of consciousness, or the way that we look at things. And that's what we never want to lose sight of. I think that a really good example of how the consciousness of humankind has changed, I use this one in the classroom quite frequently, but I remember as a little girl that that litter was an issue, and that a lot of times we didn't think about what it meant to throw a piece of trash out on the earth somewhere. And that there began to be a consciousness, a call to change that, so they had a little campaign to have a litter basket, a litter bag in your car, a litter bag in your car. That was kind of hard to say. And so we did that. But if you look how we come forward, we are now, our consciousness is so changed, we have grown and expanded and in a deeper appreciation for the good we as individuals can do, that there's probably nobody here that would think of going out into get in your car and emptying your trash in the parking lot, right? We just wouldn't do that anymore. We wouldn't empty our ashtrays. We wouldn't, well, except maybe the people at the bus stop that don't quite reach the trash can. Sometimes we face that. But most of us have a consciousness for picking up after ourselves. And what has happened is as that has evolved, as we have pulled that consciousness forward, we now live in a world where we look at recycling. We talk about leaving a smaller footprint. We're more conscious about making our having less waste, creating less waste in the way that we live. And so rather than be discouraged at those who are not on the same level of consciousness with you, let's say in that particular order, recycling or making a smaller footprint, instead of being discouraged by that, if that's your passion, I want you to see that it is growing, that we are changing, and that change happens, what might appear to be gradual, but over time, we can see that big change happens. So it's an ongoing process, and I think that when we call you as a champion, my ask would be that you don't get discouraged because everybody doesn't seem to align in agreement with you about these particular individual issues. That we do not only the best we can, but we know that as we do that, we become an example for others, and that we are shining this greater light, and we are changing as we change our own mind. We are tapping into that, the collective mind, right? What Jung would call the collective unconscious. But I'm looking at the way we are spiritually evolving and the evolution of consciousness as well. So it's an ongoing process. And what I would say to you is think about it this way. This is such a good statement. We are acquiring, because we're always becoming. So let's think about it this way. We are currently acquiring a consciousness around our physical relationship with the earth. Okay? So I don't really care whether or not you're worried about global warming or what side of that issue you stand on. It doesn't matter to me. What matters to me is that I show up in a way that is aligned to my own consciousness, my own integrity, so that I know I'm doing as good as I can as an individual. And that's where I am championing something that's important to me. So remember, we learn over time, you know. When we get more information, we make higher decisions, and that's the natural way evolution works. So let's look at it historically. This was really fun. This was a fun topic to play with all week. If you look at the history of the world, it wasn't that long ago. Sometimes it makes my knees shudder to think of how recently it was, only a few hundred years ago, when people thought the world was flat. Wow, that just makes us laugh when we think about that now. You know, that's like, how isn't that interesting? But the information, even the, especially maybe, the scientific, geological, all the knowledge that we have now, they didn't have a few hundred years ago. And so they believed the world was flat. They believed that the earth was the center of the universe, right? Now we understand, no, it's not the sun moving around us. We're moving around the sun. The sun is the center of the universe in physical terms, at least from what we know now. Don't you wonder what another couple hundred years might reveal? And I think that's the place we want to stay in. So let me make it more personal. Let me make it much more personal. In my 60 plus years on this planet, most of you will relate to the examples I'm about to share, not all of you. In my lifetime, I grew up in a male-dominated society. The papa was a very different figure than my husband as a papa. In my lifetime, I grew up in a racially segregated world. In my lifetime, it was a sin to practice homosexuality. And in my lifetime, I think, I didn't research this exactly, but they were still doing lobotomies if you were too depressed. They're disconnecting parts of your brain so you wouldn't be so sad all the time. Instead, they just made you stupid. Now, today, 60, 50, 60 years later, now I am a woman. On a Sunday morning, I have a pulpit. I am an ordained minister. Well, that was a rare thing. I mean, it wasn't impossible, but it was a rare thing when I was a younger woman. I now perform, as an ordained minister, I perform gay marriages that are legal. And I stand in this world where I actually tell people, and I say this with great joy, that depression is actually good for you. You know, spiritually speaking, we all need a good old dark night of the soul. And let's face it, most of us have had at least one. And when you get on the other side of a dark night of the soul, what do you have? You have knowledge that you can get through it. And if you can do that, you can do other things, right? So the world is different. The consciousness of humanity has changed just in those last 60 years. You know, this is 2019. I graduated high school in 1969. That's 50, it's our 50th, and our 50th, I don't have a reunion, but some people have a 50-year reunion, right? 50 years ago, that's so shocking to imagine that could be true. But back then in 1969, I thought I owned the world, man. I was like 17, turned 18 that same year, and so we're teenagers. There's a period in time where, if we looked at the history of the world, we could look back and say, "Oh, it's like we were in the teen years then." You know, those rebels. So I was thinking that 50 years ago, I was a teenager. 60 years ago, the world looked real different, the way in which I described. But 2,000 years ago, at the beginning of the time of Christianity and around the time that Jesus walked on the earth, 2,000 years ago, they had a very different consciousness. 2,000 years ago. Can you imagine how different the consciousness of humankind must have been compared to now? If we can see 50-year change, what would it be like to have 2,000-year change? And I read some spunky author that I read this week said, yes, it would be like they were teenagers. They were the rebels. So imagine Jesus, this man, comes and he's got this really different message. I mean, talk about a hippie. He's telling you, yeah, love everybody, you know. Be kind, even to those people that are different than you. We got to have love. We got to have compassion. And, oh, and by the way, the Father and I are one, right? And so, wow, how stunning and shocking that must have been to the world. But then I was thinking, yeah, but in the perspective of time, what would the consciousness of humanity have been 2,000 years before that? And so here's what I want you to see. We go back to that Holmes quote that it's an eternal unfoldment. We are always changing. So we need to be champions to hold that space of light and not get confused by the stuff that doesn't look so godly or divine, right? It's only there if we see it. It's only there if we name it and we call it forward. It's why we encourage each other to be here in spiritual community. So that, I mean, let's face it, I got a perspective of the world, but it's pretty little. You have a perspective of the world that's completely different than mine, but yours is pretty little too. And none of us can actually see the whole at any given time. But we can sense it. We can know it. It is what we teach when we talk about perfect, whole, and complete, that there is only one God. You know, it's interesting to think that there was a time where there were cave dwellers. I don't imagine that cave dwellers were very spiritual because they had to be really thinking about the immediacy of their safety and their survival. But it's in the nature of being human that we eventually grow in consciousness until we can ponder those abstract ideas that we can sense, but we can't really, you know, touch necessarily. And so everything is always constantly changing. I imagine from the cave dwellers, you go many thousands, maybe millions, I don't really know much about the history of humanity, but then we come into the earliest known organized ideas of religion, other than the earth indigenous tribal thought, You get the Tao in Asia. And then more time passes, another 1,000, 1,500 years pass. And then we get, maybe not so much because Hinduism was probably sprouting up. And then we get the idea of the multiplicity of gods. And yet, even in Hinduism, especially in Buddhism, which is a branch of Hinduism, we get that idea that there's not one God, but one ultimate reality. And then now we get into the time period of the Old Testament, and we begin to see one God, one, this emphasis on one. And it's this whole, now we're looking at the Abrahamic faiths, where now we're getting out branches of those who are looking at this idea of oneness. The message is evolving. And now, further from that, we're understanding that one includes us, that we're not separate from it, we don't worship it, that it's actually an entire who we are. We are divinely created. That divine DNA in our very being is evidence of that greater sense of life. So it doesn't matter if we're rebels in our teen years or we're taking that sagey wisdom that anchors us and shows us that way to expand our minds in consciousness. So taking you back to that opening quote, as you accept the notion of divine intelligence at work in the world, wow, then our understanding of spiritual law gradually expands. We are evolving. We are maturing. I don't really care what you call it, but it's a way that we are now stepping into this idea of oneness, and now recycling our trash is a tiny piece of a bigger picture of the way we are all connected. And what I do with my trash now is not just about my life, it impacts everybody else's life as well. And we're seeing, because of this gorgeous World Wide Web, the internet, we understand the web of life, that my vibration on that web makes a difference into the whole web. So this teaching, Holmes once said that, as somebody asked, are we Christian? He said, we are Christian and we are more. And see, I think I understand that now. We are more than just any one religious view of what Christianity is, just in the same way that Jesus was not a Christian. We are tapping into what we call the Christ consciousness, but it's a universal understanding of love as the greatest force in the universe. If I had a perfect ministry, so I thought about this, thought I would tell you this. You should know this. If I could have the perfect ministry, it would look like this. I would be surrounded by people that are hungry to grow. I would be surrounded by people who are willing to be open to sensing and seeing and touching the presence of God in all kinds of ways. I would be surrounded by people in a perfect world. I would be surrounded by people that desired to be in community and that they would be resilient and ready. They would be spiritually poised and they would stand with me in defiance of despair. Does any of that sound familiar? It should sound very familiar because those are the titles of the talks I've given all this month. You heard a lot about those things, right? But I'm thinking that we should package up these messages. I think there's something here. I'm telling you, I was just trying to write a little Sunday message, and it hit me that this entire month we have focused on some pretty important things that have led us to this moment, which I consider this moment to be a call. This is a call for champions. And here's the thing. I'm calling all champions because I know who you are. I know that you are already the champions that I'm looking for. That we do come together to learn about spiritual principles so that we might spiritually evolve the consciousness of this community to higher and higher ways of relating to all of this, to all of this. So what it boiled down to was that I realized you are the manifestation of my prayer. Each one of you is a manifestation of my greatest prayer to be in a community where we can create an uprising of hope and new possibilities. See, I need this teaching. I need this teaching, and I don't want to be alone in this teaching. Because we do good work when we join together to be champions for this message that's so full of brilliance, of divine light, of guidance, of skills. So I know that my thoughts make a difference. And if I'm seeing the doom and the gloom in the world, even for just a little moment, I need people in my life that will point me in a different direction. And that's who you are. That's who we are to each other. My thoughts matter and your thoughts matter. And so, you know, I'm convinced that you're champions because you're here. You're sitting on a Sunday morning, you are sitting in the sanctuary of a Science of Mind spiritual center. You're listening to my voice from somewhere, from your own home or in your car. But you are here because what I mean by here is that I mean you are here in the consciousness of possibility. Will you be a champion for possibility? Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. And will you hold me up when I get confused? Yes. Thank you. I'm so happy it is an answered prayer. See, we live and we move and we have our being in this infinite intelligence, this unlimited possibility. And so we know that we, as we change our thinking, that we change our lives, and we know that that ripples out. We know that as we align ourselves to this divine flow, that there's some kind of an energetic pattern that just exists. And when we get in sync with it, wow. Everything is different. We begin to realize that we are vessels to receive, to be filled up with that grace of God. And so as we advance our own well-being, let's not be shy here. You are here to advance your own well-being, whether you want to or not. I'm sort of insisting here. Because when we advance our own well-being, we are advancing the consciousness of all of humanity. This, my friends, is what spiritual evolution is. That's how we help create an essence of an uprising of hope and possibility. That's what makes us possibilitarians. Right? Right? Mm-hmm. Norman Vincent Peale made that word up. I didn't. I actually gave credit to Jean Houston for it because she always says it. But Norman Vincent Peale, you know who he was, right? Father of positive thinking, right? We know who Norman Vincent Peale is. Did you know, though, that Norman Vincent Peale was influenced by the studies of Science of Mind, that Ernest Holmes turned him on to positive thinking? So here's something I found. In 1987, which was shortly before Norman Vincent Peale made his, isn't it funny we have a Norman in the sound booth? Norman, you're famous today. In 1987, just before Norman Vincent Peale made his transition, he was being interviewed by a magazine or somebody, and he disclosed in that interview where he was rooted, how he got started. These are his words. It was the mystic Ernest Holmes that changed my life. And then he goes on to tell this great story about how in 1920, when he was a young man, he got his first job as a reporter for a newspaper in Detroit. And he was scared to death. He wasn't sure he was really qualified for the job, and he was really scared. And his boss, who was the editor, saw how afraid he was, and he went, "Young man, come over here. I have something for you." And he gave him Dr. Ernest Holmes' book, Creative Mind and Success. It was 1920. That book was released in 1918. in 1920, it had only been around 2 years, he gave him this book, and the editor said to young Norman, "Now I want you to read this. I know this fellow Holmes. I've learned a lot from him, and so can you." And so can you, and he did. And then the story goes on to say that in the 1940s, they actually met each other, that Dr. Holmes had come to listen to Norman Vincent Peale speak and vice versa, and so they got to know each other. Wouldn't that be fun to get to know your heroes like that? So, you know, this is the substance of this teaching. This is what we're made of, stuff that's life-changing. And we are evolving, we are growing, but the potency of that writing, of all of the writings and the teachings we have, they have not been watered down. We certainly have been augmented with lots of other information. And one of my great joys is reading the people that Holmes studied, or reading the people, those prolific writers and speakers of the early part of the 20th century. So Holmes could fill an audience, an auditorium. You know, they would pack them in at these giant theaters. But so were all kinds of other people speaking and writing about these great spiritual truths. There was Christian Larson and Bill Wilson, Neville, Napoleon Hill, and my current most favorite one that I'm just having a total love affair with right now, Pierre Teilhard de Chardin. A French person who shows up all the time when I'm reading, people will quote him. And so I'm studying him because he's really interesting. He was a paleontologist. He was a scientist. He was a Jesuit priest. And when he was a young man, he was a stretcher bearer in World War I. Teilhard de Chardin. And here are his words. He said, "If we are to perceive and measure progress, we must look resolutely beyond the individual viewpoint." See, we don't need everybody to agree with us. I just love that we aren't out trying to evangelize. I can't even say it anymore. I used to be one. I can't even say it anymore. So the reason we don't have to do that is because we have such a powerful message that as we align ourselves to stand in that truth, we attract it. We attract it. And of course we tell people about it, but I promise you it tickles me every time somebody says, I'll say, "How'd you find the center?" And they said, "I was just driving down the street. I drive by here all the time. I never ever noticed that building before. And all of a sudden I just knew I wanted to come check it out and see what you do there. And you know what? The books you have in your bookstore are the same books I read." Why is that? It's the law of attraction. It's the way we do our work. We stand in our truth. We definitely, you know, we spread the word by the example of not buying into the doom and the gloom. Or by, you know, it's like coming home and realizing, "Oh, I think I got some of that on me." And then you go clean up, you know, you go get change your mind. Because as we change our thinking, as we change our mind, we change our life, and we impact the world in a very different way. We must look beyond the individual viewpoint. Some of us, especially as we stay in the teaching for a while and we immerse ourselves in the things that excite us. Do you notice how I let an author grab me and I stay with that author for a little while? And then I get whatever I can, and then I'm ready to see where Spirit would have me study next. But what we're doing is we are some of us, as we are expanding our consciousness, evolving spiritually, some of us seem to be able to perceive the whole of life in momentary glimpses. And what if that's all we need? What if that's all we need is a momentary glimpse? So I have a spiritual practice, and I pray in the morning, I meditate, and I read every morning and, you know, throughout the day. But because of that, I'm primed. That's the benefit of spiritual practice. And it doesn't mean I don't get tangled up in some of the negativity in life, but what it means is I get tangled in it, and it's like, you ever untangle chains when jewelry gets connected? You can't force it. You have to do the opposite. Oh, I'm tangled in it. Wait a minute. Stop. Take a breath. Choose again. And in that looseness, we begin to untangle that which is not the truth, so that we have that glimpse of what is the truth. And then we can see, as we stand and we look back at the history of humanity, the ways in which our consciousness has changed, and we can understand that those patterns of change can comfort us, because it can remind us that we too, even now, are changing. We're growing. We're stretching our consciousness to see in even a greater way that there's more going on than just the problems in the world. We can study and learn to use spiritual law, to apply it to our lives, to hear that call to be a champion for light, to be a champion for love, and to know that in some way then, as we come together, it might only be a glimpse of the whole, but we can see a bigger picture when we join in the consciousness of a Sunday morning or a class or a book study group. The more that we create a sense of unity in our lives, the more we contribute to the advancement of humanity in this stream of spiritual evolution. Dr. Holmes said, "Evolution is proof of an irresistible urge which pushes everything onward and upward." So I'm calling you today. I'm calling all of you as champions to rise above the discord. I'm calling you to see God, to name it, to point to it so other people can see it too, to feel it, to wear it, to be aware of it in that interior part of your being. Calling all champions, for we are the future. We are the guiding light in a changing world. We are relevant. We matter. You make a difference. So let's take a breath. And I just know that there are people in this room that have felt some sort of a divine call this morning, because there's an urge in life pulling us forward. And so at this time, I would ask the practitioners and the ministers to please circle the room. As we ready ourselves for the sacredness, the holy words of prayer, with open hearts and open minds, receptive, we have been called this day, called to remember yet again that right where we are is that amazing, ever-present wisdom of the divine. I feel the love of God within me, and I know it is this great activity of life. It is the movement of the Holy Spirit waking me yet again, calling all champions. We simply allow ourselves to open in a deeper way than ever before to realize what it is we have been called to do and who we have been called to be. I feel the love of God, and I know it is the most powerful force in this universe. And each and every one of us has that movement of love, of life within us. For there is no place where God is not. And so right where we are, right at the very core of our being, something quickens within us even now. And it is, yes, a force of love. And it is that love that is the brilliant divine light that heals all things. It is that knowing that breathes life into all things. It is the way we cast out demons, the demons of darkness, so that we might stand in a new position, a new perspective, and to perceive life in all of its holiness, in all of its beauty, in all of its goodness. And so I know that as we are fully open and feeling that divine energetic moving through us, sparkened into being, that we become refreshed and renewed and rejuvenated, that anything that may appear to ail us is healed, it's banished from our attention, from our being, because the truth is we already are whole and we are perfect and we are complete. And every organ in our body, every muscle, every function of our being responds to the words of this prayer. So that we reveal the wholeness, the truth of who we are. We are children of God, created in the image and the likeness of the divine. And therefore, there is this divine revealing that is happening. And it not only heals our physical being, but I know that it extends out, it touches all of our loved ones. Knowing that as we are concerned about the well-being of the people we care about, that right where they are too, also is God in its fullness, in its completeness, desiring to reveal that perfection. And so we just breathe. We breathe and we choose. We choose to see the light. We choose to see the love. We choose to open ourselves to be healed and whole and restored to fitness in every way, to have our relationships blessed. We open our hearts to a new experience of forgiveness, a forgiveness that includes that activity of spirit itself. And I know that wherever there is any appearance of limitation in any way, that we can see beyond that sense of scarcity and into the truth that we are amply blessed in every good way, that we know who it is that sources us at all times. And so we just open ourselves to receive. This spiritual community is open, receiving the good that we desire and more, pressed down and flowing over. We allow ourselves to be those vessels. And we do good work in the world, and it returns to us multiplied abundantly. Say, thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you, life. Thank you, infinite spirit. I am so grateful. And in that spirit of deep, deep gratitude, I simply release the words of this prayer into the divine law, knowing in peace it is already done. And together we say, and so it is.